Good afternoon, members. We have a quorum, so we'll call the meeting of the Capital Investment Committee to order. And our first order of business is to approve minutes from the last meeting. Representative O'Driscoll, would you care to, have you reviewed the minutes and care to move their approval?
Mr. Chair, it's my privilege and pleasure to move the minutes from March 24th for approval, sir.
Thank you. O'Driscoll moves approval of the minutes of March 24th. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed by the same sign. Thank you. First up today, we have an overview.
Yeah.
Local Ridge and Road and Bridge Program. Please come forward, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed with your presentation.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Ted Scheniker. I'm the MnDOT Deputy State Aid Engineer. As the chair mentioned, I'm here to give you a little background on the local bridge replacements and local road improvement programs. You should have two handouts in your package there that we're going to provide some information on each of these programs. I don't know exactly where they are, but they look like this. So one for local bridge, one for local road improvement. We'll start with the local bridge replacement program. The front of there just gives some general information on the program for you to read at a future date. But this program has been in place for about 40 years now, since 1972. It's very well established and very supported by the counties, cities, and townships that utilize the funding in this program. It is there to fund the reconstruction, rehabilitation, or replacement of bridges on the local road system. As you see in that handout, there is eligibility and prioritization of project criteria in there. As you go to the back side of that handout, because this program is very well established, there is no specific solicitation for it. So it is a well-developed process where there is little administrative process where counties, cities, townships prepare the designs, submit them to our office for our review, and as funding is available, we fund those projects. Funding for those projects is for construction only. If money is put into the program without any specific projects being identified, it goes towards construction only. It does not include engineering. It does not include right-of-way or other components that are part of a construction program, or project, I should say. I'll talk a little bit more about that at the end of this if projects are added into the program. You'll see at the bottom of the back of the page, or the back page, there's a summary of past several years of that program, the funding that's gone into it, and the number of projects that have been completed. Just to give you a few numbers kind of to keep in mind here as you're looking at this, there are approximately 1,300 bridges currently identified by county board or city council resolution as a priority replacement for those local agencies as part of their five-year capital improvement program. So those agencies have already, through their process, identified the need to replace bridges within their organization. The 2015 average local bridge construction cost was $630,000. So obviously some will cost less, some will cost more, but $630,000 per bridge, average cost last year. If we look historically at this program, just looking back throughout the years, like I said, back through 2006, what we found is that approximately every dollar of state bond money that has been put into this program, it's leveraged about $1.50 to $2 of other funds. So whether that's local sales tax, local levies, federal dollars, it's leveraging $1.50 to $2. And that's just for the construction costs. If we add in the additional engineering, right away, other costs associated with those projects, that number is higher. We currently have a waiting list of projects in our office, so there's that big list of 1,300 bridges that are identified. We have a smaller list of projects that have either their designs have moved through and been approved by our office or are currently in design right now and going through our office for review. As of February 2016, that list includes 105 projects requesting approximately $28 million in bond funds for a total project cost of about $58 million. So again, that matches up with what we've said about $1 of bond funds equals about $1 of other funds for this program. That list currently does not include the 10th Avenue Bridge in Minneapolis or the Kellogg Boulevard Bridge in St. Paul. So we can move to the local bridge program, or I'm sorry, the local road improvement program. This program is newer, created in 2002. There are actually three accounts in this program. There's the Trunk Highway Corridor account. This is actually an account for the local share of trunk highway projects. There's the Routes of Regional Significance account and the Rural Road Safety account. Unlike the local bridge replacement program, there is a solicitation for projects when funds are put into this. So if there's funding put into it, we send out a solicitation, local agencies prepare an application and submit that to state aid for review. Once those applications are submitted, an advisory committee is convened. They review all the applications and provide recommendations for funding for those projects. Similar to the local bridge replacement program, the funding in this program is for construction only. For the past two solicitations, the advisory committee has actually broken out the funding into different percentages. So the county's portion is 50%, state aid cities is 30%, small cities, which are those cities with a population under 5,000, 10%, and townships at 10% also. Primary purpose behind this is to help similar types of projects, similar types of local agencies compete against each other. So you don't have a gravel township road competing against a four-lane roadway carrying much higher ADTs. As a part of that program, that advisory committee also puts a cap on every project of $750,000. And that's in order to help make those funds go towards more projects throughout the state. Again, looking at the back page of that handout for the local road improvement program, that again highlights the funding summary over the past several years for that program and the projects associated with it. If we look at the 2014 and 2015 solicitation that was recently done, there were 87 projects that were not selected out of that solicitation. Those projects were seeking approximately $47 million in bond funds with a total project cost of about $150 million. So again, that's a $1 of bond funds matching, leveraging about $2 in other funding. And that's a little bit higher than the bridge program because they have that cap on these projects. The bridge program doesn't have a cap on the projects. So if we, in the past couple of years in these programs, some specific projects have been identified for funding in those projects. And as experience kind of helps us and feedback that we've received from counties and cities regarding individual projects being put into that program, they ask two things if projects are going to be put into those programs again. One, be clear on what the funding is for. Because the program as a whole funds construction, if you identify a specific project, and the intent is to also fund engineering and right-of-way, if you identify that project, make sure that those specific uses are included in that. And then two, include a specific dollar amount with that project so it is known and understood how much funding that project should receive. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Could you describe in a little more detail how the cap works on the local road fund?
Mr. Chair, the cap works. So if you have a project that's $750,000, it could receive $750,000 out of the program. So that's the max amount it can receive. If a project costs $2 million, The maximum amount of bond money it will receive is $750,000. So then the local agency would be responsible for the remaining costs.
And has that cap been in place since the inception of the program?
Mr. Chair, I believe it has, but it changes from every solicitation. So prior to this last one, the cap was lower at $500,000.
And has there ever been a cap on the local bridge fund?
Mr. Chair, no, not to my knowledge.
And is there a reason why, is there any reason why we couldn't put a cap on the local bridge fund?
Mr. Chair, I don't see a reason. As it is right now, the statute language that is out there provides general guidance on both of these programs. The cap for the local road improvement program is established by the advisory committee that meets and reviews those applications.
So that cap is reevaluated each year?
Yes.
If there were a cap on the local bridge fund, is there a similar committee that could recommend a cap for that fund?
Mr. Chair, primarily because the programs are administered differently, where the local road improvement program is a solicitation of projects and those are reviewed, and the bridge program is more of a early on review of the need of the project, identifying the funding, and then as funding becomes available, funding those projects.
So you mentioned that the average cost of a bridge was $630,000, is that right?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
So at what level would we place a cap that would catch 90% of the projects?
Mr. Chair, we looked back kind of historically at that information, and more recently, because of the Franklin Avenue Bridge and the amount of funding in that program that went towards that project, and we started looking at what we'd call, I'll say, budget buster type projects. And the number that we got into was about $5 million would capture the significant most bridges in the state.
Very good. We have a question from Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The application process, is that ongoing for the local road improvement program, or is there a deadline?
Mr. Chair, committee members, as funding is put into the program, then we open up the solicitation for a window of time.
A follow-up, Representative? Representative Wagenius has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to know, when these bridges are built, the new ones, how long they last. And the reason I'm asking this is, if you have 1,300 bridges in the queue, are we going to build all those bridges and then just start all over again, or are we actually going to get the job done because the bridges that we're building are going to last long enough?
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Shonaker,
committee members, there's a lot of it depends in that question or in that answer. Bridges are built, and I'm getting outside of my little comfort zone of bridge engineering, but we're talking 80 to 100 years of life out of those bridges typically. And that's with regular ongoing maintenance and major rehabs that happen along the way, but that's typically the lifespan. If it doesn't outgrow its traffic conditions and other things, you know, if there's not truck or weight restrictions, but that's typically the time frame that we look at in the bridge replacement. So at some point in the future, the bridge would need to be replaced. It's just a matter of when.
A follow-up, Representative Guineas.
Thank you. So two things. I mean, 80 to 100 years sounds good. It seems that some of the bridges we built in the 1970s didn't have that kind of lifespan expected, and so going back to what Oaks did earlier is smart. But that doesn't tell me, are we going to finish these bridges that are in the queue within 80 years or 50 years? Or do we have a timeline when all this should be done by?
Mr. Shonaker.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we don't. It's more of a matter of each local agency looking at the needs within their system. And so as funding becomes available, it's probably more of a funding question as opposed to a specific timeline of this bridge is going to be replaced at this time, at this time, at this time. And so as these bridges deteriorate, as their conditions change, That's when they would be looking at replacing them. So I don't think I have a good answer for you that can say we're going to replace 10 this year and every single year after that, and then we will be done after 60 years.
Another quick follow-up, Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. It does seem that in a state where we have the 35W mm-hmm. bridge collapse, that our first priority should be safety.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is our priority, then looking at these bridges differently and the timeline that we're on does seem to be reasonable.
Okay.
Would you agree with that?
Yes. Mr.
Schoenecker.
Yes,
yeah.
I would.
Thank you. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just looking at that first sheet, you've got the 1,761 bridges that are kind of on the deficient or obsolete. What percentage of those, I've heard some talk about culvert replacement when it comes to some of these bridges. Rather than build a bridge, you could probably replace them. How many do you suppose of that would probably fall into that area, that from a construction standpoint? Maybe that's not your forte, but if you could get back to me on that number, that'd be interesting. Thank
Mr.
you.
Chair, committee members, that is something that our office looks at every time a bridge is replaced to see if there is a more cost-effective bridge or culvert to put in its place. But we can look at that and get back with you.
Thank you. Representative Hausman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to clarify then, so it was $28 million this year's need for local bridges and $47 million for local roads. That would be a total of $75 for all local roads and bridges this year.
Mr. Chair, committee members, the bridges is more defined because those are projects that we have in, and that was that $28 million of current requests. The local road improvements is based on a solicitation done 2 years ago. And so that changes, or could change, I should say, if money is put into this program again, that project types, project selection, projects that local agencies are submitting, it may change from the last solicitation to this solicitation. So the idea behind that 47 that weren't select, that 47 million that wasn't selected, was just to give kind of a gauge of possible need out there.
Thank you. I don't see any more questions at this time. I assume you'll be in the room for the duration and
yes, Mr.
available
Chair.
To answer questions if we need you. Thank you. Thank you. First up for a project is House File. Whoops, I'm looking at the wrong line. Sorry about that. The Highway 610 project, Representative Smith is going to present to us today. Welcome to the testifiers table, Representative Smith. It's nice to see you in committee today. Would you care to introduce the project?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Good to be with you today as well. Highway 610 is a vital east-west link to the growing northwest suburbs. This road impacts and benefits 16 local communities. The project has been built in stages since 1989, and it will help promote jobs and economic development in the region by increasing connections between the area west of I-94 and other job centers in the region, including major employers along 610, including a hospital and additional medical facilities. I have two testifiers I would like to receive testimony from, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Introduce yourself for the record, please, and go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair. Heidi Nelson. I'm the City Administrator for the City of Maple Grove.
I'm Ken Ashfell. I'm Director of Public Works and City Engineer for the City of Maple Grove.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Representative Smith, Chair Torkelson, and members of the Capital Investment Committee for allowing us to present to you today. I want to kind of reiterate some of the history that Representative Smith went over here with regard to the 610 project. It has been long been envisioned as the critical east-west connection for the North Metro, dating back to the early 1960s. We are right now at the point of a reality of coming to the point of connecting 610 to I-94, and Maple Grove has been an active partner in that project since its inception. In the early 90s, the City of Maple Grove partnered with its neighbors and MnDOT to complete the necessary environmental studies that allowed for the preservation of the corridor and allowed for the acquisition of the right-of-way to begin at that time. That work through the environmental studies identified the need to reconstruct County Road 30, the County Road 30 interchange, to allow for the future connection of 610 to I-94. In 2006, the city of Maple Grove took the lead on that project and funded it locally at a cost of $32 million, resulting in the new interchange at Maple Grove Parkway. The city is very proud of the partnerships that have been forged along the way with this project with cities, counties, the MnDOT, and Met Council. The current construction of 610 provides for one of the final pieces of the overall system as envisioned for the Metro Area Highway System planned by MnDOT and its local partners. Two major components remain to be funded and constructed, which include the full connection of 610 to I-94 and the Kassaw 610 extension to County Road 30. The County State Aid Highway 610 extension to County Road 30 is one of the few remaining minor arterial connectors identified in the Met Council Highway System Plan. The funding request that we are focused on today is for the regional connections associated with the Kassaw 610 extension, not the trunk highway components. This connection serves areas that are experiencing significant development pressure beyond the borders of Maple Grove into Dayton, Corcoran, and Rogers. The extension of the Kassaw 610 to County Road 30 is a key element to the overall system that allows for the infrastructure to work to its full potential. In addition, the County Road 30 connection is needed to serve a growing area of population industry that is currently unserved by a state highway system. There is no trunk highway facility between 55 and I-94. This is in contrast to the areas to the south and west that are served by 169, 212, 5, 7, 12, and 55. The County Road 30 corridor serves the needs of industry and residents into and through Wright County, providing for the rural and suburban connection to the suburban and urban core. Lack of adequate connections to County Road 30 through Kassaw 610 results in additional strain on I-94. When the principal arterial system starts to break down, Maple Grove experiences local traffic diverting to the minor arterial systems, collector, and local streets. This causes unsafe conditions on local streets as they are not designed to accommodate regional traffic. As an example, traffic projection models indicate that without the Kassaw 610 connection to County Road 30, Weaver Lake Road and the existing County Road 30 will experience a significant increase in traffic volumes. Both of these roads are approaching capacity today. To summarize the benefits of the Kassaw 610 extension project, it provides for the preservation of the operational integrity of the existing investments, particularly the Maple Grove Parkway interchange. It also serves the needs for growth of industry and residential areas anticipated in the region up to 2040 in the Northwest Metro area. At this point, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Ken Ashfield, Maple Grove's Director of Public Works and Engineering, to review the specific funding request.
Thanks, Heidi, and thank you, Chair Torkelson and committee members. I've had an opportunity to work on this project almost upwards of 30 years for the city, and as Ms. Nelson indicated, we're making some significant progress and some connections, but the project is short a few pieces. We're happy to provide to you this this brochure that is on your table that you may want to refer to. Just quickly, those parts that are in orange are being constructed today under the Corridors of Commerce project that you may be familiar with. Those portions in yellow are yet to be constructed, and generally those parts of yellow that are east of 94 would be that part considered as trunk highway. Those portions lying west would be considered the Kassaw 610 extension, which is a local facility. When I say local, I mean county, and partnershiping with the city of Maple Grove. We're happy to be here. The funding requirements for this project is quite unique in that, as with the portions of Trunk Highway 610, those portions of the project are actually fundable under the Highway Trust Fund dollars or either transportation bonding dollars. Those are improvements that are actually occurring on Trunk Highway right-of-way. The portion that is the Kassaw 610 connection to bring the County Road 30 project into the system are the connections to 94, and those would be on a county road right-of-way. with these types of projects, our funding sources are somewhat limited. You just heard testimony about the local road improvement program, but you also heard testimony that the limits of funding on that is $750,000, which is a far cry from the needs to finish off this project. This is the Kassaw 610 and what would be the trunk highway portions are the completion of a very large project all the way from the East Metro to the West, and this would finish off that project once and for all. Other potential funding sources at the local level would be the Met Council STP program, that's the Surface Transportation Program, or Transportation Economic Development Funds. In each case, the funding abilities of those programs are somewhat limited. Of course, there's always the local funding of a program or a project. Ms. Nelson spoke of the Maple Grove Parkway interchange where the city funded that project to the tune of $32 million. When we fund projects at the local level, we only have a couple sources, and the largest source is special assessments to the benefited properties. It's these types of activities that create that private-public partnership between the state, MnDOT, cities, that type of thing. To fund that project, the city special assessed the benefited lands to the extent that the market can sustain those type of assessments. So as far as the public-private partnership, we're pretty much extended that ability. So that leaves us with looking for other funds. Now, it would be very difficult for the city to justify an expenditure in the area of the cost of this project when much of the benefit is actually beyond the borders of the city of Maple Grove. Certainly, the city has an interest in preserving the integrity of the systems that we already built, specifically Maple Grove Parkway interchange, which would break down after congestion levels. But actually, the traffic impacts our local street system. So certainly, the city has a stake in the interest of the Kassaw 610 portion of this project to preserve the operations and integrity of our existing system, but the majority of the benefit actually is regional, extending far to the west. So with that, in summary, we would like to impress upon Chair Torgerson and your committee to take into account the importance of this project, the nature of the project, and the funding difficulties that this project faces. And that we stand ready to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Mr. Ashfeld, does 610 end at the intersection with 94?
Essentially, yes, Chairman and committee members. If you note from the drawing that the westbound 610 connection to eastbound I-94, that is a missing connection, that the actual turning movement occurs on the west side, but that is the extent of it.
So from there on, then it becomes a county state aid highway.
Yes.
And it will. What will its designation be as far as a number?
At this point, we're simply referring to it as Kassaw 610 in that we haven't defined it as a road. And the method that we have come up with that determination is similar to the Trunk Highway 62 and the Kassaw 62 connection on 494 down in the Eden Prairie area. Whether that would be perpetuated or not, I'm not sure, but it would be a good course.
I've driven there many times. I don't think my car knows the difference.
Correct.
With that, the $45 million project cost is the total cost, or can you give me a breakdown on that?
Mr. Chair, the $45 million is the anticipated cost for both the trunk highway portion. and the CASA portion. Our estimate on the CASA, or the local portion, would be $25 million.
Thank you. I have a question from Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill speaks of modifications. Does MnDOT support support what you're suggesting as modification?
Mr. Eshfeld.
I believe the modification speaks in the terms of completing the Trunk Highway 610 project. So it would be a modification of the existing project that is under construction. Going back a few years ago, when this project received Corridors of Commerce funding, in anybody's, or at least in MnDOT's perspective, certainly ours, we would have liked to have seen this project finished off. At that time, based on the available funding, we had to pick and choose what portions of the project were to be completed, and the main objective was to make the connection to 94 in some manner to handle the east-west traffic from 94 to 610, recognizing that there were a few connections or a couple connections still missing. So to answer your question specifically, the modification refers to a modification of the existing project, but I can't speak for MnDOT, but they were supportive of completing the project if they could have under the Corridors of Commerce funding. It's just that funding level was limited.
And Mr. Chair, if I could follow up on the questions you asked about those two amounts. So you're here presumably because you're seeking the GO bonding for that one portion. So suppose you were successful in the GO, but the other piece doesn't happen. Can one be done without the other?
Mr. Ashwell.
Mr. Chair and committee, yes, the two projects could stand on their own. The trunk highway piece would require a STIP amendment and then bringing forth the funding through, like I said, either through the Trunk Highway User Trust Fund or through transportation bonding dollars or again funded through the Corridors of Commerce. In the scope of the MnDOT portion, they have a number of different funding sources, but the actual construction is on the order of $10 to $15 million. And I guess if you spoke to someone from MnDOT, that's still a large chunk of dollars for their program. But $25 million for a city or the county is a much larger chunk yet. So it would be our expectations that MnDOT would amend the STIP or their transportation improvement program in the metro area to include the trunk highway portion to complement the local piece. One can go without the other, but they are both integral components or integral elements to the overall system.
And then, Mr. Chair, just maybe to you, I happen to be on transportation too, and we had last year heard quite a number of them, and Representative Kelly just sent them all on to your committee, as I recall. But this one is this one going to stay in transportation, or I don't think we've heard it there yet. What do we know?
Thank you, Representative Hausman, for the question. We don't know. But there are a number of projects that have both components of trunk highway and local road, and we'll have to work through that. Representative Uglum has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm pretty familiar with this project. Worked on it for many years when I was mayor in Champlin, and Ms. Nelson referred to the fact that 16 local units of government here on the 610 corridor do benefit from this. And if any of you have driven along the 610 corridor that's completed now, an incredible amount of economic development there. And my question for Ms. Nelson was, do we have any figures on just how many jobs and how many buildings and things have been built along that 610 corridor now?
Ms. Nelson, I'm going to ask you to hold your answer for just a moment. I'm going to give Representative Smith a chance to wrap up, because I know he has to go to another meeting. So if you want to give your closing remarks in advance of the closing, Representative Smith, that'd be just fine with the chair.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I ask for your support for this very important project. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Smith. And now, Ms. Nelson, please go ahead with your answer.
Chair Torkelson, Member Uglum, I don't have those numbers with us today, but I'd be happy to provide them back to the committee. You're correct. There has been significant investment as 610 has proceeded to the west, and we do anticipate that trend to continue now from Brooklyn right. Park through over to Maple Grove. But we'd be happy to collect some of that data and provide it back to the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson. Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, it's certainly in the thousands and maybe multiple thousands in terms of jobs that have been created there in this corridor. And the extension here that we're talking about, I think, would contribute even more to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. And finally, Representative Wagenius.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. You talked about adequate connections, and I like that word. I represent parts of Minneapolis and parts of Richfield, and for both now, adequate connections means connecting corridors for people who are riding bicycles. Do you, in your plan, and I can't tell from this map, have those kinds of connections, particularly for this youngest generation that we have, who are now attracted to the city because of our bicycle connections, and we're finding that this generation, that's extraordinarily important for this generation. So is that part of your planning process too?
Ms. Nelson, or whoever wants it, grab it.
Chair and committee members, to answer your question specifically, that part of the trunk highway facility would not be taking into account pedestrian facilities or bikeways. Normally, those bicycles are not allowed on those types of facilities because of the speeds, those types of things, and then there's regional trailways that accommodate those needs. However, on the local system, which would be the CASA 610, yes, there would be trails and walkways on both sides of that road. Within the city of Maple Grove, we build those on every road that is collector and above, and actually beginning in 1995, we've been building sidewalks on both sides of every road.
Mr. Wagenius.
So this would allow folks who are using bicycles as transportation to access the jobs that are being talked about?
Mr. Ashfeld.
Chair and committee, absolutely. Okay. The Maple Grove Parkway connections that you see on your map already have trailways and connections on both sides. We would be building trailways and connections along that part of CASA 610, to which point it would truncate into or connect into I-94, and then those connections, or I should say the pedestrian bicycle connections, would then be diverted onto other roadways to get them where they need to go. So say, for example, on the map that's in front of you, there's a couple dashed lines. Those again would be local streets with trails and connections on both sides.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I have no more questions. Any closing remarks?
Chair, members of the committee, no closing remarks other than we appreciate the time and your consideration of this important project for the Northwest Metro.
Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Next, members, we have a series of items with bill numbers. We are hearing these for information only. We will not be taking any votes on any of these bills, but we will be gathering information. First up is a Neuberger presentation. Welcome to the testifiers table, Representative Neuberger. It's nice to see you today.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm here today to talk to you about a township in my district. I passed out a real high-tech map. It's in two colors for your convenience. In the center of the map is Watab Township, Watab, that's how it's pronounced. Watab is unique. It sits right between the city of Rice and the city of St. Cloud. As you know, that Highway 10 is a major arterial for northern Minnesota, people going from St. Cloud or from the metro up the Highway 10 corridor there. The traffic levels there have been historically increasing, and it's been a real issue, so much so that the city of Rice, there used to be a red light stoplight there. They shut that down. MnDOT did a really good job. They built a bypass so you don't have to stop in Rice, so it doesn't stop traffic. Unfortunately, MnDOT did such a good job that the brakes and traffic are very few and far between. Why does Watab come into play here? There are neighborhoods on the east and the west side of Highway 10 that have their only access to get in and out of these communities for this township. Simply put, you pull up, you come to a stop, you look left, you look right, you pray for about 5 seconds, then you stomp on the gas. That's how that works there. As amusing as that might seem, it's truly a safety issue that we have going here. I spoke, this has been something that the Watab community has wanted. I'm asking for some interchanges to be built so that we don't disrupt the flow of traffic between St. Cloud and Rice, but yet we would offer a measure of safety for these neighborhoods and the thousands of people that live there so they don't take their lives in their hands every time they try to pull out on Highway 10. This was supposed to be done about 10 years ago. MnDOT had all the plans, everything was ready to go, and it hasn't happened. Currently, I spoke with the MnDOT people from my district, and there is no current plan to continue forward with this, so this is why I'm doing it. This is truly a safety issue. I have worked, as you know, in EMS. I used to work in St. Cloud, and this stretch of road is what we would call a trauma magnet. That's a nice way to put it. I spoke with the Benton County Sheriff this morning, and he was thrilled at the fact that we're bringing this up again. This had come up 3 years ago, didn't make it into the bonding bill. They're thrilled at this. His words were basically this. He said, during a holiday weekend or any peak time, you cannot get out on Highway 10 without taking a risk, period. And members, it was brought up here by Representative Wagenius that safety should be at our utmost priority, and I agree with her in this regard. Members, if one of these days, if we get a school bus or a minivan full of kids, or you fill in the blank, I just don't even want to go there. So this is what I'm asking for. I'm asking for some interchanges so that the people that live in this area don't have to risk their lives every time they pull out on 10.
Thank you, Representative. What kind of interchange do you have in mind for this project?
There would be three. At this point, I'm flexible, but there are three bridges that would go over that would basically split the difference, and then there would be entrance and exit ramps that would go that would connect the communities. That's what we're looking at. We're trying to not disrupt the flow as much as possible.
So you said three bridges?
Correct.
And they would be spaced out how far?
They would be spaced out because if you look at this map, if you look at where on the left side of the map, you can see where the river, Mississippi River, kind of cuts it in two. We would have to have a minimum of one on the northern end and one on the southern end. We're putting one in the center because that's where the town hall is, and that's where we get the majority of our traffic and the majority of the people take the risks. That would be off County Road 4 there if you draw a line straight across. There'd be one roughly north of there and one south. And, excuse me, this stretch of highway between Sauk Rapids and Rice, that's approximately 7 miles, 5 to 7 miles.
And, Representative, do you have a cost estimate for this project?
Well, yes, I do. This can all be done for $12 million. That's what we're asking for.
And do you know if there's a split between trunk highway funds and local road funds?
I did inquire about this. Trunk highway funds, from what I understand, would be extremely hard to obtain for this. we'd be better off trying to go. The county doesn't have the money for this. Right now, they've got other projects that they've got their money tied up in right now. But at this point in the game, the best opportunity that we'd have would be to bond for this.
And can you tell me the derivation of WATAB?
The derivation
of WATAB.
All right, you're going to have to define the word.
Oh, where'd it come from?
Well, thank you. WATAB, well, I could spin a yarn and lie to you, or I could just say I don't know.
Neither do I. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Neuberger, could you just speak a little bit in terms of, as I'm looking at this copy, I'm just wondering in terms of where emergency services would gain access or be able to get off to points which would be to the west. Is there a concern presently, or how would that be alleviated by your projects?
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Albright, right now the emergency services, this area is served by Gold Cross Ambulance out of St. Cloud. It's my knowledge that they have a unit that's stationed in northern St. Cloud. Generally, the access point is they would come up Highway 15, or they would come up Highway 15 and grab Highway 10 if they're in their base. If they don't have resources available, they would probably be pulling units from the eastern side of Benton County, which would come across Benton County. Those would be the North Memorial units. Regardless, this is not an easy area to get to when you're in an ambulance. And I will say this, members, I do know from personal experience, it's really hard to get out on Highway 10 during the day. If it's at night and if there's any kind of weather at all, it's almost impossible. I can tell you that time and time again. That's been my personal experience. This is frightening what these people have to put up with, so that's why I'm here.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Neuberger, I guess I could attest to that also. One of my favorite places to stop on the way up north is Rumors, which I was there last Thursday night. But is that, seriously though, County Road 4 is where you're talking about this interchange. And so how will that affect everybody south of there in terms of, would they take that or would they still be trying to enter on Highway 10?
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we do the full project, there would be one north of there and there would be one south of there because, like I said, it's about 5 to 7 miles. Stretch of highway there, so I would be, they would, if I was them, I'd be inclined to take one that we would build south of there. At this point, though, something needs to be done. Humor aside, it is a frightening stretch of road to try to pull out onto, and we have families that we have an entire community here that's they have no choice. That's what they have to do. So,
a follow-up person, you.
So, Representative Neuberger, then you're saying that. Of the two, if you had your choice, you'd build it south of County Road 4. At where?
Oh, that's... Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. I'm not going to make that decision. That would be something that's like picking between your kids.
Okay.
All right. I don't see any other questions. Any closing remarks, Representative Neuberger?
It's a good bill. Please vote yes.
We're not voting today, but...
well, it's just the future seed, Mr. Chair.
Thanks for the encouragement. next up, we have Representative Hoppe. Welcome to the Capital Investment Committee, Representative Hoppe. Please introduce your project.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And while everybody's getting situated here, I went to school in Stearns County at St. John's, and I am familiar with the derivation of WATAB. It's a Native American word that means build a bridge in Carver County.
Thank you. I'm glad you got such a good education.
No, it was a quality education, and I paid attention. So with that, what we're looking to do is build a bridge on Carver County Road 140, which would cross 212 and Highway 212 in the sort of the western part of Chaska, and almost to the middle of Carver County, and would allow the development of a business park along the highway. And with that, I will turn it over to the mayor of Chaska and the city manager of Chaska, who know a lot more about the project than I do. Thank
Please,
you, Mr. Chairman.
Introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Hi, I'm Mark Winchittle. I'm the mayor of Chaska.
And I'm Matt Podorowski. I'm the city administrator for the city of Chaska.
Go ahead. What?
First of all, thank you to Representative Hoppe, to Representative Torkelson, and to the committee for hearing us today. We're here in front of you because of a project that we feel is real important to our community, to the Southwest Metro area, and then for communities to the west. For those of you who aren't familiar, Highway 212 was a road that was expanded to four lanes from Highway 494 out to the city of Carver and was completed in 2006. As part of that, there's been quite a change in the landscape of the Southwest Metro area along 212 since then. We've seen quite a bit of change in the city of Chaska and now are looking at some of the future development areas there and some of the things that weren't completed as part of the original 212 project, which we are seeing now are real critical for us to be able to move forward with development. The project in front of you today is a request for an interchange at the intersection of Carver County Road 140 and Trunk Highway 212. This is a local project that is not adding capacity to 212, but is a local project to create access onto 212. The project is about $10.5 million. The specific request is $10,521,000. This represents about half the cost that a typical interchange like this would cost, and primarily because we were able to go back in and design the road to be able to reuse the infrastructure that's already there. So the bridge that's already in place and was put there as part of the original 212 construction would be reutilized. To create the pedestrian access across the freeway, we would build a pedestrian bridge next to it so that we could avoid as much construction as possible. And then we're able to reutilize the bridge because we put roundabouts on either end of the bridge to be able to reduce it down to the necessary number of lanes to not expand the bridge. So it is a relatively low-cost project for an interchange. One of the importance of this project is the congestion that's going to help relieve specifically on Carver County Road 10. So Carver County Road 10 is the exit that you get off of 212 to access communities to the west of Chaska, so Waconia and Victoria primarily. This has become a very heavily used intersection and is the main east-west corridor through Carver County and where most of the traffic that we see coming off of 212 occurs. This interchange at County Road 10 is actually currently failing because it was not constructed as a cloverleaf construction, but was instead constructed where it required left-hand turns across traffic to get there, and so it backs up. Without this interchange at 140, which is basically one interchange or one county road to the south, there is nothing to relieve County Road 110 or County Road 10, and it will become a significant issue as we move into the future. In order for that to work, this project also has to include the construction of collector roads by the city and the county on either side of the freeway. So we have about $22 million that we're going to be committing into this overall project to be able to construct those collector roads so that we really truly can see this as a pressure reducer on County Road 10. And it also serves the purpose then of being able to keep local trips from going onto the freeway to have to get to local destinations so we can keep them on city roads and not increase the congestion along 212. This is a project that has already been approved by the Met Council and by MnDOT. It was conditionally approved based on being able to pull together funding for it, so it is part of the Met Council's transportation plan. We really feel that this interchange really helps to maximize the investment that was already put into the 212 freeway when it was completed. And the mayor's going to address some of the economic impacts that it has both on the community and the region, but also why it's something that's supported by the Southwest Transportation Coalition for communities that are going to the west of Chaska.
Thank you, Matt. Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for being here. Also, thanks to Mr. Representative Hoppe and Senator Ortman for bringing this forward for us. As Matt talked about, 212 is a real important road for us. When that opened up, that really made a difference in Chaska, opened it up. We didn't ever had a good way of traveling through. So that was huge for us. And with that running through our city, one thing we never really gained was a lot of frontage to that 212 for business opportunities. This project will open up nearly 1,000 acres of land that will give us an opportunity for more business and industrial. You know, that way we're maximizing that $300 million investment in the freeway already and utilizing that. We currently have two industrial parks that are full right now, and we have many medical device companies in our city that are in need of expansion or just completely building out totally new. And we'd certainly want to keep those there, but right now we're short of land to be able to do that. This, again, will open up a lot of spaces for that to happen. And like Matt said, we have the support of a lot of different organizations, one being the Southwest Transportation Alliance, which actually is cities from Eden Prairie all the way to South Dakota border. And we meet monthly and talking about the 212 work, so we have that. Carver County's in support of it, obviously the City of Chaska, the City of Victoria, Southwest Chamber of Commerce, and Club West LLC. So we have a lot of partners that are in favor of this. It would open up approximately 4,100 jobs in this area. And so you could see, for our standpoint, it's a huge return for the City of Chaska, and we feel that it's really a low investment overall. So thank you.
Thank you. I do not see any questions. Mr. Mayor, I may be wrong, but I thought I read someplace that the mayor of New Ulm recently joined your group of Southwest Transportation Alliance, or am I thinking of a different group?
Mr. Chair, we're happy to have him, and we're glad he's on board.
Yeah,
New Ulm's a fine city. We love it.
That's where I was born, so sure. They're on. He may have. We have a meeting in a week, so that
very
could
good.
Be something coming forward.
I'll double check on that. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is going to go in the far most western part of Chaska, really the last part that's still going to be developed. And so if we're looking in the neighborhood of 4,000 jobs, I think the expectation is that the people that hold those jobs aren't living in Chaska. They're going to be coming from the communities that are served by 212 that are to the south and the west. So it's you know, it's while it's technically in Chaska, and it's going to be, I think that's one of the reasons it's supported by, you know, all the mayors and the chambers and the city councils on 212 going south and west all the way out to South Dakota.
Very good. We have a question from Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have sometimes set up funds for precisely something like this, and TED, for example, comes to mind. Is that, have you... and we occasionally put some money in it. Is that something you've pursued?
Yes, it is something we've pursued in the past. One of the challenges has been the actual cost of it and what's actually available through TED. Because we're putting you know, about $22 million into the infrastructure that has to support this interchange, with the TED program, we just don't have enough to be able to cover the cost of this interchange. So it is a viable option as far as a program that could support it, but it's really just the scale of the project that's goes sort of out of the realm of what TED can support.
Thank you, Ms. Podrasky. I have a question from Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hoppe, I guess my question is there a river close by that has a lot of exposed spruce roots? And the reason I'm asking is that Watab comes from the Ojibwe language, river with spruce roots, due to the exposed roots.
Do.
And they would use them to sew the panels of a canoe together. So being from Stearns County in St. Cloud and knowing Watab's used quite a bit, I never knew it meant building a bridge in Chaska.
Well,
Representative Hoppe, would you care to dig yourself out of this hole? Oh,
thank you, Mr. Chair. And this actually isn't a hole. It's a different interpretation of tribal ancient customs and language. And as societies changed and we had the Mindawakaton migrate down from central Minnesota, they did settle in what is now Chaska along the banks of the Minnesota River, and they did find an ample supply there of spruce roots, not only used for that, but also for a very attractive basketry. But I appreciate your interest and thank you. And it really sort of, I think, ties this whole thing together nicely.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. I have no more questions on the list. Would you care to give any closing remarks, Representative Hoppe?
Mr. Chair, members, all of us appreciate your time, and we like working with the Met Council and the Southwest Corridor Group. And really, in my term here, working on 212 and other projects, it's been nice to see people all the way from Eden Prairie out to South Dakota that are all supportive of these things. And when you talk to the folks from, you know, Montevideo and Granite Falls and things like that, it's a big deal to them to cut a little bit of time off their transit or their commute into the Twin Cities, or to put jobs in an area that it might not directly benefit them, but it all helps. So with that, we'd appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Hoppe, and thank you, gentlemen, for your presentation. I just add that we're certainly not making light of our American Indian history. That's a very important part of the history of Minnesota and has given us a rich variety of names, including Wattenwan County, where I was born. So, thank you.
Well said, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
We'll move on to Representative Miller. Welcome to committee, Representative Miller. It's nice to see you today.
Nice to see you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I realize it was 1 week ago today. I was sitting exactly in this chair discussing the same region, Appleton and Swift County, however, on a different subject. I don't believe this one will be quite as controversial as last week. I pray that it won't be. So what I'd like to present to you today is a relatively small road project that has sort of a unique situation that I think is a very good fit for the sort of projects that you discuss when you talk about local road bonding. I'll address some of this a little bit more in my presentation, but basically, because of the nature of what this project is, there isn't necessarily another good fit, and this may look as a small project, but it has a pretty big impact, which I believe when we're investing taxpayer dollars in anything, we want to be able to get as much bang for the buck as we can, and I believe this will do it. If you look at the handout that I gave you of kind of some of the mapping, it'll say Appleton. The page one says Minnesota Department of Transportation proposal and says Appleton on it. And what you'll see is a little loop on an area of a map. What's right there is a township road right now. And it's about as low grade a township road as you might have. There's a couple of homeowners that are on that road. Other than that, in the past, that road has not been used a great deal. However, at the same time, in just on the edge of Appleton, over off of Highway 119, Westcon Industries has greatly expanded their elevator operations there. And with that, they anticipate that the number of trucks will increase by 3 to 4 times. They did open up the facility for last harvest, and there was increased activity like they expressed. In the past, that elevator was there, and in the past, what you'll see on that first map is that they would come in kind of northbound on Highway 759, and they would make, you can see on the next page an aerial map of it, they would make a hairpin left turn to turn onto Highway 119, and that's what they're doing right now. One thing that this map does not show is not only is it a tight turn, but also the grade is such that it's kind of a forced turn. You also have issues with line of sight. This is, while this project that I'm talking about is out in the township, out in the county, that turn is in the city of Appleton itself, and it's an area where pedestrians are, and there's a lot of local things that go on there. If you're not real comfortable with the area, this intersection can be a bit confusing as well. So they came to me last year and said, we would like to increase traffic on that township road. However, it because of its quality, it can't sustain the truck traffic that's being proposed. So they asked for a improve it to 10 tons. I asked them kind of, could we look at it this one of three different ways? Improve it as a township road, just improve it to 10 tons. Change it into a county road, which would in effect raise it to the 10 tons and might affect the way that they do it. It may also bring in, potentially, not that counties have much money, but they might have more access to more funds than a township. Or number three, we actually went to MnDOT, and one of the things that we looked at is just changing Highway 119, reroute it so that it cuts straight across and just completely separates out from Appleton altogether. We recognize that this is probably the best above all fits. If I won't get into too much details on the other options unless there's some questions, but just to give an example, if you talk about turning this into moving 119 and rerouting it over there, you have more issues that come in. Township, or pardon me, a county road, same thing with the sides of the roads, with curves and stuff like that. It would greatly increase the cost of this project. Right now we're asking for $1 million. That's the estimated cost that the engineers have determined to improve this township up to a 10-ton road. So if you will switch, go through, these are just different maps to look at the project. The last page is just the Westcon edition to show it's a huge, I couldn't tell you how many bushels, but it's a very big operation now. But if you go to the end, I have two letters of support. One's from the city of Appleton, which they kind of describe what the need is and what their concerns are. And then the other one, I met with the district office for MnDOT in that area, MnDOT 4, I always forget, because I have MnDOT 8 and MnDOT 4, I believe. And both of them are very supportive of this. I think I won't read through their letters. You can do that. Let's see, what else did I have on my little notes here? Really, the three reasons that we believe that there's a need is we have the increased traffic, which requires or increases a safety issue, as I said, in Appleton, and also, to be honest, the degradation of the current township road. One of the challenges that we have is that trucks are identifying this as a better route, and there's no keep-off sign. So the trucks already rolled on this last year, and anyone that's driven, I've driven sugar beet trucks for 11 years, and I can tell you when you drive on those back township roads, they get torn up pretty bad and pretty fast, and that's what's happening. They have talked with the two homeowners on that property because there will be a little bit of a widening of the road perhaps to improve it to 10 tons, and they've accepted that. One other little quick note, when you look through the maps, just so you understand where it says new road and eliminated road on those two pages, that's just to kind of take care of an existing need already, especially with traffic, and it puts the road at a perpendicular position to the highways. It gives better line of sight when people are pulling out on it. And all of those are acceptable to MnDOT. We have some railroad there on the one side of it, on the south side, I'll call it. Is that the right direction? Yeah. Everyone in the area really believes that this is probably kind of a good choice with a simple solution. So that's the information that I have. I'm not sure if I left anything else, so I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Representative Dean has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Miller. As I look at this map, I just want to ask you a question. So are you going to ultimately be reducing the number of intersections along 119 as well as along 59 by, you know, eliminating some of these roads, so you'll actually sort of, make it probably a lot safer because less cars are going to be coming in and out at different points?
Representative Miller.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, that's exactly one of the things that they want to do. Right now, as you can see visually, you're always looking at a steep angle when you're turning one way or the other, and we'd eliminate that as well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions. Any closing remarks, Representative Miller?
I appreciate it, Mr. Chair, as you are coming to decisions on this. If you like the other projects, I'm sure that you'll love my project, so don't forget us. And thank you for this time.
At this point, Representative Miller, we love them all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Heitzman.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the Capital Investment Committee, Representative Heitzman. Please go ahead and introduce your project.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Maybe you could clarify a question that we had while we were listening. We were wondering, is it better to present first in this committee or last?
Yes. Or every day.
You know, we don't play favorites here, Representative Heitzman.
Very good. I'm going to go ahead and allow my testifier to introduce himself and to introduce the project for the committee.
Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeremy Vasinic. I'm the finance director for the City of Baxter, and I want to thank Chair Torkelson and members of the Capital Investment Committee for hearing our bill today. We appreciate the opportunity to present the City of Baxter's bonding request for our 2018 Cypress Drive improvements. I want to provide, first of all, a little bit of background on the project. The Cypress Drive corridor in the City of Baxter is a little over 2.75 miles within the city. It's a local parallel street to Trunk Highway 371. If you're familiar with Trunk Highway 371, it's an interregional corridor that starts in Little Falls and ends in Walker through the Lakes Country. It is one of the busiest intersections along with Highway 210, which also bisects the City of Baxter, traveling from south of Duluth to the North Dakota border, with over 27,000 vehicles per day at that intersection. The City of Baxter has worked on kind of an initiative to build parallel streets for both the Trunk Highway 371 and 210 corridors to really get the local traffic off of these interregional corridors and preserve the capacity of those corridors. Trunk Highway 371 was built as a bypass in the early 2000s to bypass downtown Brainerd. When it was built, it truly wasn't a bypass, though. It already went through existing areas that are developed in Baxter, and there is no other alternative in the future to bypass the City of Baxter and any other development that has already occurred along there. So that's why the Cypress Drive corridor is very important. It would alleviate a lot of the traffic at the busy intersection of 371 and 210, having locals use more of these local streets rather than 371. In the packet of information provided on the back, there's kind of a map that shows kind of our initiative with our various corridors that we're looking at building. The highlighted ones are really the alternatives to 371 and 210, and what we kind of refer to as our 694 and 494 loop around the city. And the Cypress Drive on the east side, or on the right-hand side of your map corridor, is an area that we have been working on. Currently, we've built approximately 1 mile of urban divided four-lane road in 2007, and that was largely through an undeveloped area on the eastern edge of the city. The next phase that we're asking for your support on is about a three-quarter mile that would extend from Excelsior Road south to College Road through the city's industrial park. This bonding request of a little under $5 million for the over $10 million project cost will assist with the completion of this important segment of the street. And it is important because this is an existing area that's already developed, so it's a little bit more complicated to build the capacity that's needed with a four-lane road. It also crosses Highway 210, as well as the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad tracks, and through parcels that are currently a Superfund site, and then along through the industrial park of the city. And it would expand the project area from an existing narrow street and urban divided road to function as an alternative to Highway 371. One of the future phases that's proposed just south of this would be another $4 million that the city would entail in completing in 2020, and that would complete the connection all the way down to County Road 48 at the southern terminus. Some of the reasons that we are requesting bonding money, first of all, is the benefit to the state transportation system. As I've mentioned, it is an alternative to the interregional corridor of 371 for locals to use. MnDOT has indicated they would like to see the stoplight move that's currently at Golf Course Drive. It is on 210. It is too close to the 371 intersection. By moving it east to this new intersection, it provides more space for that. While MnDOT's supportive of it, they aren't willing to pay for it, so falling back on the city requirement. And the next part of it is a rail safety concern. The City of Baxter, since 1980, has worked to close over five public railroad crossings during that time. So the city has spearheaded the efforts to improve railroad safety, and this project will provide significant safety in the form of crossing arms and the latest technology in railroad crossing. And it does provide for limited crossings in this urban area. Currently, the intersection that crosses the railroad at Highway 371 on the west side, if you travel to the east, within the next crossing currently is in the city of Brainerd, over 1.4 miles away. As I mentioned, the railroad and Highway 210 do bisect both the cities of Brainerd and Baxter, so this does provide some limited connectivity going north and south between the cities, and this spacing would help assist in putting a crossing near the middle of that. In addition to that, it does promote some economic development within the city. As I mentioned, it does travel through our industrial park. We currently have over 1,000 jobs in our industrial park. It does provide another access point for the industrial park. Currently, most of the truck traffic does have to exit the industrial park to the west along College Road, and that's competing traffic with a commercial and retail area in that area. So this does provide an alternative for that. As I mentioned, it is a Superfund site, and Superfund was a tie plant that was built and closed, and it's currently under MPCA control. We've been working diligently with the MPCA and the railroad over a number of years to get the site cleaned up. The site actually is further to the east of this, but it's just attached because the parcels are in the same ownership by the railroad. In addition to that, the Paul Bunyan Trail does traverse this area from Crow Wing State Park to the south, all the way to the city of Bemidji, and this provides another linkage to that. The city has worked with DNR to provide for joint powers agreements to provide for some local connections to the Paul Bunyan Trail, so this would certainly provide some connections to the commercial area as well as to the state park to the south. And finally, some of the things that we've done so far I've kind of outlined in the handout that we provided. We've already invested over $1 million in this project, demonstrating our commitment to this corridor. We've commissioned multiple traffic studies with MnDOT, as well as regional transportation planners and Burlington Northern Railroad, for the purposes of minimizing those non-essential railroad intersections. As I mentioned, we've closed five since 1980. The construction will provide for the ultimate build-out of Cypress Drive between County Roads 48 and 49 to the north. We've received Level 2 layout funding from MnDOT for the 210 intersection, as well as we've secured a little over $400,000 for the future railroad crossing through a local surface transportation program federal funding, and acquired multiple properties along the way as they become available for the expansion of this street.
Very good. Representative Hauser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did you by any chance pursue BDPI funding for this, just given the economic development piece of this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, could you repeat the question? What kind of funding?
The BDPI fund, that's the Economic Development Fund for Greater Minnesota. For
Mr.
Representative Torkelson, Representative Hausman, I'm not sure if we did that program. I know we did try the TED program a year or two ago, and there unfortunately just wasn't enough funding for it at that time.
We're sometimes more generous to BDPI, so I thought maybe there would be some.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. Representative Ugin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, I'm just trying to get my bearings on this road here. Is this the road that's just over by Costco and Home Depot, just to the west of that?
Representative Torkelson, Representative, it actually is to the east. This road would go through the former golf course, if you're familiar with the Baxter area. It's more to the east, where the Paul Bunyan, it's adjacent to the Paul Bunyan Trail. There's a trail bridge and Beeble to the east of 371.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Representative Ugin.
So you've done I'm sure you've done a traffic study on this and everything else. Do you have any idea how many trucks you're going to be able to take off of 371 210 because of this project?
Mr. Chair, Representative, unfortunately, I don't have that information. I can provide that as far as the number of trucks, but it certainly, as I indicated, it would alleviate within the industrial park alone the number of trucks that would have to exit onto 371, go north, across the railroad tracks, go through the busy 210-371 intersection, which already is failing. They added two left turn lanes to 371 last year, and it still is graded D or below, but I can get that information for you.
Thank you.
Very good. I do not see any other questions. Representative Heintzman, do you have any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm hoping that you approve our project. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Members, We are not meeting on Thursday of this week. We're going to free up a little time for those committees that have deadlines, which is the rest of them. So we'll let we'll hopefully give members, other committee chairs, a little extra time to get their work done in this first week of deadline. With that, members, we are adjourned for today. Thank you.